Wednesday the 26th of May, Yud Gimun, Sivan, Rabbi Yonason Shuter, Kohen Gadol meets the Soton. This week's Torah Way has been sponsored by Family Stimler, L'chovod HaNisuyim today of Moshe Yehuda Lipschitz and Rivki Stimler.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming this morning. Just last night I bumped into someone and he said to me, while you're in London, are you speaking anywhere? So I said, yeah, actually, I'm speaking the Torah Way tomorrow morning. Because he's not here now. But... So he said to me, what are you speaking about? So I said, Yeshua and Gadol and the Satan. And he looked at me like... said to me, well, you know, it's the Haftorah of the week. Ah, yes, okay. So this morning I'd like to start the day with the Haftorah Way, if that's okay. And... share some insights on the Haftorah. For some reason I've been involved in Haftorahs lately. Just finished the Sefer on all the 80 Haftorahs, so I thought it might be something a bit different to hear about. The Gemara says, in fact, that there were a total of 1,200,000 prophets who prophesied to Klal Yisrael over the years. Except that, what happened to all these... all these prophecies that were given over. The Gemara says that only a Nevuah that was needed for generations was actually written down. So however many it is, that 12, 20, whatever, however many it is, those are the ones that we are needed for ourselves. And it's interesting as well that when Chachamim, just made this takana that there should be such a thing as a Haftorah, right? That they decide that they obviously picked certain specific ones out of all the Sifrei Nevi'im, and therefore it stands to reason that when we are given a particular Haftorah, not only it's not of all those prophecies that were given over, these are obviously the most relevant ones, and of those ones that are actually written down, these ones are actually selected that they should be somehow at the forefront of our thoughts, at least in the people when we read them. So let's try and get a little bit novi-sized for a few minutes. At the time, during the building of the second bais, there were two leaders of the Jewish people. One was called Yeshua the Kohen Gadol. He was a tzaddik, a real tzaddik. And then the other leader was Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel, he was the governor at the time. Some say he was actually Nehemiah, who eventually led the people back to Eretz Yisrael from Babel. And they were actually within this Haftorah, they both received messages that are favorable for them and messages of encouragement. The building of the second bais was being held up by various bands of goyim who were somehow trying to get in the way of the building of the bais. Nevertheless, Hashem speaks words of encouragement to them. The background to this specific we're going to focus on seven psukim today. The background to these psukim is as follows. Nebuchadnezzar had a sort of fetish of throwing people in fiery furnace. We know the three famous people who survived the fiery furnace. That was round one. In round two, there's two false prophets. One's called Achav, not the king. This is another Achav, and someone else called Sidkiyahu, again not the king. These were apparently names at the time. And for whatever reason, it's brought down the Gemara, but we don't have to discuss it now. They were selected by Nebuchadnezzar to be thrown in the fiery furnace, and they actually deserved it. Anyway, Nebuchadnezzar, maybe he didn't like Zugos or something, so he said, you know what, you two choose a third person to go with you in the fiery furnace. So this Achav and Sidkiyahu, they chose a third man. So who do you choose? Obviously, you choose one of the Gedolim. Not just because you want to get at him, but because they thought that his zechus would actually stand, for them. Perhaps they'd be saved on account of him. However, the result was the two of them met their ashy end. This is the tekufa of the ashes. So they also met their ashy end. And Yeshua, the Kohen Gadol, he actually survived this. The great nes took place. Nevertheless, his clothes were scorched and singed. So, our Haftorah shifts in immediately to this, and as the Yeshua was emerging, there was a court case going on up in Shemayim with the Satan challenging Yeshua Kohen Gadol that, you're so righteous, and yet you know, the others who were thrown in, they came completely unscathed, even their clothes were okay. And you, however, your clothes were singed. There's an accusation against you, and that's where the Satan is accusing. And that's where we'll pick up our Pesukim. So I'd like to look in here, if you have a sheet to look at, there's just look at seven Pesukim. I'm not saying that one word of these Pesukim is easy. What is it? Any other word of Nevi'im, but nevertheless, let's try and understand a little bit of what we should glean out from these Pesukim. Let's just take these Pesukim bit by bit. Vayareinius Yoshua HaKoin Gadol Oymed Lifnei Malach Hashem Vasatan Oymed Al Yeminoi Lesitnoi. This is Zechariah Perek Gimel. Says Zechariah the prophet, and I was shown a vision of Yeshua the Kohen Gadol standing in front of the Malach, and the Satan was on the right hand side to accuse. The question that's dealt with, that we'll come back to a bit later, is that the usually, you know, I haven't studied this too much, but the position of the Satan, his usual accusation position, is on the left hand side, whatever that means in sides in Shemayim, but he's usually to the left. Here the Satan has an interesting place on the right. We also want to know, of course, what's the accusation against Yahushua. Pasuk Bei says, "Vayom Hashem al Satan." Hashem says to the Satan, "Yigar Hashem b'cha Satan, v'yigar Hashem b'cha haboicher b'Yerushalayim." Hashem will denounce you, Satan. Hashem will denounce you, he who chooses Yerushalayim. Ud mutzal me'esh. Surely this is a firebrand saved from the fire. So we obviously want to understand, there's two loshens of this vayigar, yigar, that this denunciation. So we want to understand as well, why is there this multi-usage of this word? Also, it's an interesting expression as well, an ud mutzal me'esh, a firebrand saved from the fire. We'll need to understand that as well. Pasuk Gimel, v'yashua hayalavosh begadim soyim v'oymed lifnei hamalach. And Yeshua was wearing soiled garments and he was standing in front of the malach. Vayan vayomer el ha'oimdim lefanav leimar. Hasiru ha'begadim hatsoyin me'alav. The angel said, remove those soiled clothes. Vayomer elav re'eh ha'evati me'alecha avoynecha v'halbesh oischa machalotzois. See, I've removed for your sin from before you, and I have you've now got fresh garments. So what's going on here? First he's wearing dirty garments, he's told to change the garments. What changed from before to after? Just suddenly the sin's gone away. Well, what actually happened to it? V'omar, Pasuk Hei, V'omar. So this is actually now, according to some of the Mepharshim, this is Zechariah talking with a tefillah. Sorry, not the tefillah's coming, but V'omar, Yasimu Sanif Tahor Al Roshay. So Zechariah says, place a pure turban on his head, V'yasimu HaTzanif HaTahor Al Roshay, V'avishu Begadim Malachai Oymed. And indeed, the pure turban was placed on his head again, and seemingly he was somehow exonerated. Also just wanted to know why at Sanif, the turban headgear was the one that was placed on at this moment. Why not any other particular garment? Then Pasuk Vav says, Vayad Malach Hashem b'Yoshua Leimor, and this is actually a loshen of warning. The angel warns Yoshua saying as follows, Koyam Hashem t'savala, in bedrachi teilech, if you'll go in my way, v'mes mishmarti tishmo v'gamata dadin es beisi v'gam tishmo s'chatzerai v'nasati l'cham ma'alichim bein ha'oimdim ha'ele. I'll give you movement among those who are standing. One thing I also want to understand is, what's this idea of walking? You'll be walking, they'll be standing, walking. What's the meaning of this particular point? So let's try and deal with some of these questions, all these questions, and become a little bit wiser as to what's going on here. The main, as brought down in Gemara, the main accusation against Yeshua the Kohen Gadol was not actually a sin that he had done, but rather his children, who were, you know, potential Kohen Gadols, they had intermarried into with Goyisha women. And it seems that the accusation is as well that Yeshua actually hasn't protested. Now, I don't know why, I don't know the story and why not, but that's the information that we're given. So therefore, in true style, the Chofetz Chaim talks about how the clothes that according to the sins one does, the mitzvahs one does, that's how one looks in Shemaim as well, that each sin corresponds to some kind of heavenly attire. So therefore, because of this sin, his clothes appeared to be stained. However, on the other hand, he was actually saved from the fire ultimately. So therefore, it seems that he did have a sechus. So one of the svarim that this sort of brisker what goes as follows, that Rav Chaim Brisk had a son called Rav Moshe, and he asked the son of Rav Moshe to explain this whole incident, you know, what was the exact accusation. So he says as follows, there's a pasuk that says, V'chiper ba'adoy v'ad beisoy, regarding the avoider of Yom Kippur. Kohen Gadol has to atone for himself and for his beisoy. Now, the question is, what's the meaning of beisoy? Well, beisoy, zu ishtoy. The base, who, right, a wife is called bias. So therefore, we have to, if the Kohen Gadol doesn't have a wife, so we'll give him a wife. And then we prepare another wife just in case something happens to that wife. So the Kohen Gadol, a requirement that that cannot be undone is that he has to have a wife. Okay. Now, Beisoy, however, we have a suit. What about children? Would they be included within Beisoy? So on one hand, well, there's no requirement that he should have children, right? He has to have a wife, not children. So therefore, maybe the limitation of Beisoy, right, is just an actual wife, and therefore, what his children are up to should not be relevant whatsoever. On the other hand, perhaps the pashtus of the word Beisoy, you know, implies those members of his family. So there's a bit of some kind of suffix going on here. Seems to be, you know, simply speaking, he doesn't need to have children. On the other hand, we're worried here, so if he does have children, then what? And that seems to be the sort of the suffix that's going on. So therefore, if, according to that tzad, that his children were considered as b'nei mum, but they were blemished, they had the, and therefore that was an accusation even against the father, therefore the posuk of Zebach was shown toyeva, because therefore that's a stain on Yeshua as well. Because his children are like this, he cannot. He would also be possible for the avoid of Yom Kippur if they're included in Beisoy, right? On the other hand, maybe it's just as Ishtoy, and therefore what the children are up to is not relevant. So you have a sort of a suffix. I can see both sides. I don't know whether the shaila is even resolved, but the point is, however, the fact that it's a suffix, right, and we're considering in the Havam, you know, that maybe this is a tainu against him. Therefore, that shows that obviously it's not a wonderful thing. And therefore there's an accusation, and perhaps on his level it's being in his position of Kohen Gadol, even if Mikra Din is not a Pasul, nevertheless he's obviously held to a high level, and therefore he could be has a certain stain because of that. However, so therefore once these wives would be out of the picture, obviously the Kohen Gadol, the sons would be unblemished, the Kohen Gadol therefore has no stain whatsoever within his beisoy. So therefore, that's the idea of the son of Rav Chaim to explain what the sin was. So therefore, now we can come on to what was the defense. In Pasuk Beis, Hashem said, Yiga Hashem b'chavah satan. Hashem will denounce you. So there's actually brought down in the Mefarshim, there's three defenses that we used here, and perhaps even a fourth. Yiga Hashem b'chavah. Hashem, that Loshen, is obviously the Midas HaRachanim. So this is the first defense, so even if he has this this sort of remnant of sin, nevertheless Hashem has mercy anyway, so using it, involving the Midas HaRachamim. The second defense is seen in the next part of the pasuk, V'yigar Hashem b'cha ha'boicher b'Yerushalayim. That means Hashem who's chosen Yerushalayim. That means there had been an avoida until now. The father and the grandfather of Yeshua and Gadol had been righteous Kohenim Gadolim, and perhaps this also helped Yeshua. So this is some kind of Zechus Avos defense. The third defense is Haloze Ud Mutzal Me'esh. He's a firebrand saved from the fire. So just the fact that he was saved shows that in fact he is righteous. This is a third defense. Another defense as well is that in fact that this is what was going on in the times, that the how this was happening was people were getting up and were getting involved within marrying these non-Jewish women, and therefore it seems that perhaps he was powerless to protest. Perhaps they wouldn't have listened. So therefore, because he's an Ud Mitzal Me'esh, there was an Esh going on around at the times, and he was the fact that Yeshua, he stayed strong, so perhaps on his own that was considered enough. So that's where we understand the defense. Other points as well that are mentioned is the fact that he was thrown into the fire, so therefore that was considered an oinesh in itself, right? We understand that he was saved, but at the time he was receiving a terrible fear upon him that it was about to be, he wasn't sure of his fate, so therefore that in itself was an oinesh. Also, one of the Mepharshim brings down that, in fact, angels came and separated these sons from their wives, and therefore that's why Yeshua was told to remove those garments. This is what had transpired within that moment of within the court. The angels came and separated the sons from their wives, so therefore now Yeshua was henceforth exonerated. Another shot brought down is that in the future the angels would come and those sons would separate from their wives in the future, so therefore bring the future to the present, and therefore Yeshua was again exonerated. So therefore, that was just trying to understand how this changed from one pasuk to the next. First, he's wearing these soiled clothes. The next pasuk in Daled, well, he's told to remove those clothes. So we're saying something had changed. So as discussed, those are some of the factors that could have been at play. Now, on the subject of the fact that there was this sort of great temptation for Arias, and specifically with these Goyisha women, this brought down a vorta that I saw. Besides the Gemara in Yuma, which says that originally the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they wanted to do away with the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah and for Gilui Arias. You read enough about how everyone's serving Avodah Zarah, go from time to time, king to king. It's terrible times. And yet, this is something we can't even relate to. That, the guy sitting next to you in shul, next minute he'd sort of be out bowing down to some golden statue. We don't even understand what it is. Except for the fact that Hanan Wasserman says that there's many things which are close to Avodah Zarah, but we're not talking about that now. We just mean the simple, plain bowing down to an idol. So they tried to do. So the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, they got together. They had a convention, and they're actually successful in banishing. Take whatever this means. They don't know exactly what they did, but they were able to banish the Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah. Next up was the Yetzer Hara for Gilui Arias. Again, as mentioned, everyone was rushing to do the wrong thing, especially non-Jewish wives as well. So now with that one, they were partially successful. And there was a weakening, but it was only a chatzi shir type of weakening. So apparently this is merames. I say it's derech remes within the pasuk. It's pasuk based on Vayom Hashem el Hasatan Yigar Hashem b'cha Hasatan. The Satan, now here he's called Satan, will be denounced, referring to the Avodah Zarah referring to the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. V'yigar Hashem b'cha habricher b'Yerushalayim. Now here it says V'yigar Hashem b'cha habricher b'Yerushalayim. Here the Satan doesn't actually have his name. He's just b'cha, you. The Satan. So therefore, that's referring to the fact that post the first denunciation of the fact that the Yetzer Hara Avodah Zarah has gone, he's lost that shame Satan a little bit. V'yigar Hashem b'cha habricher b'Yerushalayim, referring to the Yetzer Hara for Gilui Arias. Haloi zeh ud mutzal me'esh, meaning this is some kind of firebrand, some kind of coals that are still glowing. The fire has been put out, but it's still, this Yetzer Hara is still around there glowing somewhat. So this idea ties into our inyan of what was going on at the times. There's a little bit of merames too within the pasuk. One other vort on this point is that actually Rav Eliyahu Lopian, he says like this. He says, when you fight a war, there has to be you have to have two equal sides. Otherwise, the war's going to be over pretty quickly. If one side calls in another few thousand troops, the other side better get moving as well, and so on and so forth. So says Rav Eliyahu Lopian, the Satan, his way is that when it comes to other places, the Satan, it's enough for him to send forth shluchim, the many shluchim of the Satan. However, when it comes to Yerushalayim, the Satan himself has to get involved. Why? Because obviously there's an increased higher level of Kedusha. So therefore, he says Rav Eliyahu Lopian, this is in the pasuk, V'yigar Hashem b'cha habricher b'Yerushalayim. This is referring to the Satan, these words. And Hashem will denounce you, Haboicha Yerushalayim, the Satan, you who set your target specifically on Yerushalayim yourself. So that's the idea. Let's deal with... Okay, we're doing okay. One other point that I thought was interesting, before we get to the other point. The last pasuk says, "Im bedvachi teches mishpati tishma v'gamas tadunas beisi v'an tishma eschatzev v'nasati l'cham mahalchim bein ha'oimdim ha'eile." And you'll have movement among those who are standing here. Who are those standing here? The angels. Those who are, you know, who potentially are moving, that will be you, Yahshua. So, the Ravan Kotler, his vault is that that mahalchim, that a person has to always be moving. He said his basic vault is, just in a nutshell, that when there's growth, the fact that a person has grown, that in itself creates a chiyuv for further growth. He says, I think the example he gives is that if a person, you know, earns £1,000, right, and he gives £100 to Sadaka, right, it's a great tzaddik. What happens if then his income increases to £20,000 and he still gives the £100? So, you know, he's no longer quite the tzaddik, but it's the same amount, right? Obviously, the fact that that income's moved up has created a further chiyuv on his wallet. So too in Ruchnius. The fact that one has grown a little bit, he says that you are now a different metzias, a different person there, and therefore, according to that level which you are now at, that in itself has created a new chiyuv of growth as well. That's, I thought, was interesting. The other thought, though, I thought that I really wanted to mention was mahalchim bein ha'oimdim ha'eileh. That implies these malachim, you know, holy malachim. Huh, you know, you can't get better than malach, right? They are called oimdim, they're standing. If Yeshua Kohen Gadol, the dual will of Hashem, he would be called mahalchim, he'd be walking. What you see, therefore, is that a human being is actually, potentially, not even potential, is greater than a malach. Why? Well, a malach, it's very easy, right? He has no bechira, has to do the will of Hashem, so he stands there, he's given a mission to do, he has to fulfill it. There's no bechira. Now, what's God, has, you know, God put us into this world? He's put us into this world, neshama, guf, together, and the two of them are essentially going to fight it out for the rest of the whole life. That's, you know, in a nutshell, let's face it, that's our purpose on this world. So Hashem's put us in a situation where we have the Yetzer Hara, which, simply speaking, one needs a great siyata d'shmaya to overcome the Yetzirah at any moment. And he's told, despite the Yetzirah, you're still meant to attach yourself to some level of Kedusha. You're still meant to overcome that. That, therefore, is a level greater than the Malachim. The Malachim can't do that. They were never in the situation with the Yetzirah, and they had to yet rise above that and do mitzvahs, have Kedusha attach themselves to Hashem. No, it's easy to be a Malach. So that's the idea of Nasati Lacham Mahalchim. You'll be able to move in Shemayim. Right? The Malachim, they'll be still. Will be able to move. So that takes us on, really, to the last point for today. And this is the point we start. I think we've dealt with most of the questions we've raised. Just the other thing, Yamino. Right. So the Satan is standing to the right. So one idea, why is he at the right? His usual place is the left. So this is an idea I saw in the Shabbos Rabbim. He says as follows. He says, why is he on the right of Yeshua? Because he's actually the Satan. He's singing the praises of Yeshua. Standing there in Shemayim, you know Yeshua, he's such a holy person. Amazing, there's never been no one in this generation quite like him. So why has he got this sin of not rebuking his sons? So therefore you see that the Satan's actually, he's praising the person. What, perhaps, for other people might have been a smaller sin, nevertheless, for Yeshua and the Kohen Gadol and his greatness, is actually considered a terrible sin for him, on his level. So you see the Satan interesting maneuver, moving over to the right, to the side, I'm going to praise you, but it's really to get you. The other thought is, I've photocopied a piece of Chofetz Chaim, let's see if we can get through some of it, and this is really an amazing piece. There's the piece on the left-hand side we'll look at first. That's the Chofetz Chaim al HaTorah. And then there's the footnote underneath here. Let's go straight to the second paragraph. The first one, he brings the question, why, what's the Yitzhar doing on the left, on the right-hand side, his usual place is on the left. Says the, let's get to the answer, Ela ha-kavana hi kach. Dinei yadur ha-satan hua Yitzhara. And his way, what's he got to do in life? Satan's got to be doing something. You know, can't have him sitting around doing nothing. So his purpose is to push people to the left. And if he succeeds and gets into the sin with an open sin, he'll even try harder. But if the Yitzhar sees, he can't actually get the person to do an outright explicit aveira. He can't get him to do that. So the Yitzhar has got another trick up his sleeve. Azayhu poine liyamin. Then he turns to the right. Kaloima mishtadel hu ledabe aliboy. She has a mitzvah. Vishvil hamshichoy min ha mitzvah aveira. What does he do? He actually gets him to do a mitzvah. He presents an amazing mitzvah in front of the person. But that mitzvah is just the Satan's way of getting him to the path of Aveira as well. Valhadam Shumalihu is Tamid Aralashkiach Bein Pekicha Al Yetzahar, a person always has to, you know, be wary of him. The Redas Asof Daito Yizahar Mimene Betachis Azahiris Vafim Yifaseu Asois Mitzvah Al Yavir Al Mishraelav. So, when shouldn't you do a mitzvah? When it's the Satan's mitzvah. Because what's interesting is, actually he goes on to say one more line, he says a mitzvah that the Yetzirah entices him to is actually the great aveira that's bound within it. And you need to run away from it as fast as you would from a smoking volcano. That's it. So what's he saying here? An amazing thing, because I always thought, you're learning Torah, and someone comes up, so you've got to do a chesed, you've got to do something else. I always thought, what are you doing? You're going from a mitzvah of high level, let's say Torah is the highest level mitzvah you can do, and you're going to some other mitzvah. Well, it's a lower level mitzvah, but nevertheless it's still a mitzvah. What the Chofetz Chaim seems to be saying, however, is that no, on the contrary, that smaller mitzvah, you have to look at the opportunity cost of what was the bigger mitzvah? Right? What did you lose by doing the smaller mitzvah? And that's what will be held against the person, and therefore, that smaller mitzvah won't even be considered a mitzvah. It's actually considered, it's the Satan's way, as far as the Satan's concerned. I got him to close the Gemara, I got him into a small mitzvah, I have the small mitzvah, you can take that already, keep the change. That's the book. He said, then the Chofetz Chaim goes on to really say something which I, of course, couldn't say this myself. He says it's a mitzvah to go to shul, to daven with the tzibor, a kavana soiloy, a tefillah with the tzibor, but it's the intent of the person, it's not for the tefillah and the tzibor, a supper ben yishtabach leyotzer. He speaks between yishtabach and yotzer. Or the daven b'shas kriyas ha-toyra, devarim asurim, he speaks in time of kriyas ha-toyra, things that are so. And he says, this is amazing, great chiddush here as well. He says the person he'll be turned more to the tzad yamin than he is the tzad smol. It won't be the outright revert of avera. No one really does averas nowadays. Everything's a mitzvah. That's right. No, but the satan's cost benefit. The satan's method of opportunity cost, look at what you're losing and the little that I'm giving you, keep the peanuts, I've got prevented you from doing the ikka. That's where the Satan's been successful. And then he ties it up and says, he couldn't get Yeshua, the Kohen Gadol, to the Sat Small, therefore had to go to the Sat Yamin to speak good things about him, but they were only lasatnoi. That's seen in the pasuk. Vasatnoi medal yaminoi lasitnoi. He stood in the right side of the person, but it was only to accuse. Let's just go over to the right hand side. We'll skip out more than we'll read. And he says, he starts, so this is a note. I believe that these notes actually were also the words of the Chofetz Chaim as well. So he says, he's like a great general. He's got great plans how to get the enemy. And what does he do? He has an interesting game. He doesn't take pity. He's like a suicide bomber. He doesn't have pity on his emissaries. He actually gives over some of his emissaries in order that he can trick that enemy camp into thinking, you know, they should draw near, and then he'll get them with a, you know, with a sort of big, you know, right hand. That's what they call it, right hand uppercut or something. So then he says, "Kenu derech hayetzer gam kain kashemasis es ha'hoim nimsas b'neim levatei sefer shal proke all of vazei mitzvos." You say, you know, send your kids to a school of people who have separated from the yoke of mitzvos. Scorn on them. U'misyarehu pen lo yin haru acharav. Now the Yitzhar is worried. You know, people won't send there. So what does the Yitzhar do? Be'roisam ki gam ha'moyrim v'talam midehem yachad parku ala mitzvos me'alehem. You know, this person sees the teachers and the students, you know, he wouldn't want his kids there. So what does the Yitzhar do? As I mishtadal here to harach nisavei sefer kazem moire or melamed echad shemaniach tefillin v'shoyim shabbos. He puts within that particular school one teacher, one pupil, whatever it is, you know, someone who looks the part. He puts on tefillin, he keeps shabbos. Or mishtalech me'alechad atalmidim l'afos al aveira b'shvil shel l'hachshil etc. So he says that this is what we call bait for the Satan. In other words, the Satan places some kind of teacher there, someone who looks the part, but really it's the Satan's way of attracting the other people, that they will also join in. This again is exactly the same principle as we've bait for the Satan. And he says, it's like to command brachas, the Yitzhar.
What's wrong about it?
What's wrong about it?
It's a good school with a good teacher.
Yeah. He's saying, well, ultimately, the whole school is about people who are porkeol, but he's put in one good teacher, so that will get the people in, and therefore, there the Satan will be able to close in and do the job completely. Besides, it's worth seeing this few lines of Gemara. The Eitz HaHara sits between on two. It says like this: the Eitz HaTov sits on the. Who sits on the right hand side? He's always trying to get into the right hand side. However, what does the Eitz HaHara do? He's actually sitting in the middle, on the right hand side and the left hand side. How can I make people stumble? And therefore, sometimes he moves to the right and sometimes moves to the left. This is anyway. Let's cut it short, as you can see the piece later. But that's the idea. The Satan oymed al yaminoi lesitnoi. Right, the Satan's on the right hand side to accuse. Again, we've just summarized this point, that that's the Yetzer Hara's way. His usual way is the left. If you can get a person through the right hand side, through these ways discussed, then that's successful for him. As I believe with some of the Yesoidus on this Haftorah, some of them have been shut, some of them are, you know, actually a Yesoidus that we can take away. I hope that was beneficial.